A record 6.6 million Americans filed for unemployment benefits last week, and many are still trying to file.
You know, the first of the month has passed. So, of course, everything for April is due. And there is no money there.
Plus, new questions about the accuracy of coronavirus tests.
So the biggest concern is that a false negative person could be could basically be a silent spreader.
It's Thursday, April 2nd. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. There are now 1 million people who have become confirmed to have the coronavirus worldwide. That number was reported by Johns Hopkins today. Nearly a quarter of the cases are in the United States. The increased spread of the virus is keeping face masks in high demand. Healthcare workers in the U.S. are reporting shortages, and American manufacturers say it'll be months before they can meet the demand. 3M and some smaller companies have ramped up production to make about 50 million of the high-quality N95 masks a month. But the Department of Health and Human Services has said healthcare workers would need more like 300 million a month. They are getting some help, though, from an outside source. The owner of the New England Patriots sent their team plane to China to pick up more than a million masks there on Wednesday. It was the culmination of a weeks-long effort involving the governor of Massachusetts, international embassies, private partners, and the U.S.'s most successful football franchise. The price of U.S. crude oil saw its biggest percentage gain ever today, 25%, after President Trump tweeted that he expected Russia and Saudi Arabia to agree to cut production by at least 10 million barrels a day. Saudi officials later said they'd consider substantial cuts as long as the other G20 nations join the effort. But even with today's record gain, prices for U.S. crude and Brent crude, the global benchmark, are still down more than 50% so far this year. As we reported this morning, the coronavirus has been wreaking havoc on states' presidential primaries. In the biggest disruption to the presidential campaign so far, the Democratic National Committee said today it would postpone this summer's nominating convention in Milwaukee from mid-July to August 17th. Officials say they haven't decided how long the event will be or what format it'll take. The Republican National Convention is scheduled for the following week. And the number of gun background checks has hit an all-time high as Americans rush to buy firearms. The FBI performed more than 2.3 million background checks for gun sales in March, compared to 1.3 million checks in the same time last year. Gun store owners say buyers are concerned that shortages of food and other supplies will lead to a social breakdown. This week saw another milestone as a record 6.6 million Americans filed for unemployment in a single week. That's double the staggering number we saw just a week ago. But experts say there will still be a lot more to come. We spoke with Tarika Dixon, who works in the construction industry as a glazer. She's been out of work since March 20th. She says she tried to submit a claim in Pennsylvania that day, but later got a message saying she needed to resubmit on April 5th.
You know, the first of the month has passed. So, of course, everything for April is due. And there is no money there. So you try to keep the faith and hope that everything will work its way out. But it does create a lot of anxiety. It does create stressful situations, especially with myself being a single parent of two boys.
And even for people who have filed, things are not going smoothly. Maeve McDermott was furloughed from her job as a wine sommelier at a restaurant in New York. After spending hours on the phone trying to get through, she was finally able to file a claim last week. But she says her unemployment payment was miscalculated. Now she's trying to get back in touch with the New York State Labor Department, which has been inundated with claims.
I just worry about this stretching into July and August, you know, before the restaurants reopen. I think that in early March, when everything shut down, everyone was really optimistic that we would be back to work, you know, end of April and maybe May. And I think that now we're all realizing that it might be a more extended timeline. So that's scary.
These are just two of the millions of stories out there of people who are struggling to get by. Joining me now with more details is our labor economics and policy reporter, Eric Morath. So, Eric, when we spoke last week, you said it was just the tip of the iceberg and that we will continue to see high numbers like this potentially for several weeks. That is what we are now seeing. Can you give us context to the latest numbers?
We're going to continue to see high unemployment claims because for two reasons. One, a lot of people who have been affected have been unable to apply for benefits. And therefore, in states, and certainly we're seeing this in New York, people just haven't been able to get through. They probably have lost their job, but they haven't shown up in claims because they haven't got through the computer system, which Governor Cuomo recently said is frustratingly crashing and having lots of problems. The other issue is this epidemic isn't hitting the country all at the same time. So states such as Florida and Texas, which a lot of people work in, only recently employed the sort of social distancing standards we saw first in a place like Washington State. So there are workers in a place like Texas that only have been laid off this past week and therefore haven't yet shown up in claims.
And as you say, here in New York, Governor Cuomo has acknowledged that the system is having trouble processing, and we're seeing this in other areas as well. Here's Governor Cuomo on Tuesday.
I apologize for the pain. It is must be infuriating to deal with. I am telling you, we have every technology company working on it. We're spending a lot of money. The site is so deluged that it keeps crashing because you literally have hundreds of thousands of people at any time trying to get on the site.
Can you talk a little bit about the backlogs we're seeing across the country in processing and filing these claims?
Yeah, we're hearing reports all across the country of people saying that they can't get through on the phones. They are waiting for hours. The website's crashing. Some states, including Michigan, are asking people to file for claims based on their last name on different days. People are telling us that they're waking up at 2 or 3 in the morning, hoping that the system will be less busy then. But I would look at a state such as Pennsylvania. Their system's actually been working pretty well. And they've now have 12% of their workforce has filed for unemployment. That's like 1 in 8 workers have filed for unemployment. A lot of the economists are telling us that that's probably what every other state will get to in the next few weeks, which suggests there's a lot more claims to be filed.
Eric, we've heard from and you've spoken to people who are really worried about when they'll have money again. What can you tell us about when they'll see that financial relief and have it in hand? What needs to happen first in order for that to take place?
Yeah, there's two issues that are at play. For one, it's just navigating the unemployment benefits system and then getting their claim processed. So under normal circumstances, we're told that that usually takes 2 or 3 weeks to get through. But some are saying that could be as long as 4 or 5 weeks once you're actually able to get through and process the claim, given all of the delays. The other thing a lot of people are concerned about is they've heard President Trump and Congress talk about a $600 boost in benefits. So that means whatever you're getting from your state, in some states that's $300 or $400 a week, Congress has approved to step that up to $1,000, $600 more a week. But we're still waiting for that money to arrive in state coffers. The Labor Department said that that money will be sent this week. States we've talked to said they've yet to receive it. And then even then, it could be a few weeks before they're able to actually pass that on to individuals that are affected.
Eric, tomorrow we'll see unemployment numbers for the month of March, but they won't actually give us the full picture of what's been going on. Tell us a little bit more about what we can expect there.
Yeah, so the unemployment report is based on two different surveys that are tied to the 12th of the month. So for unemployment rate, if you were employed at any point during the week that included the 12th, then you'd be marked as employed, even if you were laid off later that week. So since a lot of these widespread closures and layoffs occurred a little bit later in the month, we're not expecting a huge change in the unemployment rate or the number of people on payrolls. Economists that we survey are expecting the unemployment rate to only rise by 0.2% to 3.7%. Economists say based on the claims numbers that we saw, we could see record high unemployment above 10% when we get the April report in early May.
Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Morath, thank you so much for joining me.
Sure. Happy to join you.
We talked about masks, but there's also been a shortage of coronavirus test kits in many areas. The U.S. has been working to ramp up production. But now some healthcare experts are questioning whether the newly produced tests are reliable or whether they're providing false negative readings and giving many patients who are actually infected a false sense of security. It's still too early to have data on the test reliability, but anecdotally, experts say they believe this could be impacting as many as 1 in 3 patients. Our Christopher Zinsley spoke with Wall Street Journal reporter Christopher Weaver.
So, Chris, do we have any idea why the rate of false negatives seems to be so high for these tests?
Yeah, that's not clear right now. You know, there's a few different things that could affect it. You know, for one thing, if a swab is taken and it's just not done well, it might not have enough of the virus on it for the test to detect. The proper way to take swabs for most of these tests is to stick a giant Q-tip through somebody's nose and then some, basically into the back of their throat. And that's extremely uncomfortable and apparently quite hard to do. So that's one major area where there can be kind of a failure in just collecting the specimen. There's also like this huge logistical supply chain going on around the country trying to move these specimens to labs that have the capacity to test them. And that is kind of unprecedented. I mean, people move medical labs all over the place all the time. But right now, there's just this like huge uptick in volume for these particular tests to the labs that are able to do it. And, you know, that raises questions about whether they're, you know, like sitting in a truck at a truck stop someplace for, you know, too long. You know, basically the handling, shipping, packaging of the samples as they make their way to the lab. And then, of course, you know, there's concerns on the test end, too. You know, these kinds of genetic tests can be difficult to do. And it's entirely possible that some of them could have been designed in a way that leads to, well, just to failures in some cases.
So why are false negatives such a problem, especially now?
Yeah, so look, if you get a false positive test, right, that means that your test says you're positive, but actually you don't have coronavirus. That's not really a big deal. Everybody's staying home anyway. You just go home for a couple of weeks, and if you get sicker, you might be hospitalized. But in general, that just tells the doctor to send you home and report back if your symptoms get worse. So there's not really anything huge lost in that. The problem with a false negative test, right, a patient who's actually got an infection of coronavirus, but the test says they're in the clear, is that that person might get a false sense of reassurance, and they might go home and, you know, interact with family members or go to the store or talk to neighbors or otherwise venture into the community in ways that none of us is really supposed to do, but that just to carry on our lives, we've got to on some level. So the biggest concern is that a false negative person could be could basically be a silent spreader.
So what are the implications of all of this for healthcare providers and public health officials?
So it depends where you are, I think, is the answer. If you are a doctor working in New York and you get a negative test result, that's basically meaningless right now. There's so many patients who are positive for coronavirus that doctors are just basically assuming that if you have the symptoms, you have got the virus, and not, you know, not allowing a negative result to clear anybody of anything. On the other hand, if you might be in some part of rural Texas, say, where the prevalence of the disease is much, much lower, the doctor might be more likely to basically conclude that a negative test is correct. The problem is more down the road in some ways, because I think everybody hopes that the economy can reopen, you know, sooner rather than later, that they can get back to their normal lives and businesses and jobs and all of that. And, you know, in that world, being able to recognize cases with like a really high degree of accuracy so you can contain, you know, quarantine people, trace their contacts, quarantine those, and try to prevent another big outbreak is going to be key. So I think a lot of public health people and medical professionals are sort of looking ahead to that moment and hoping that we can have tests that are providing more consistent and accurate results so we can use it, you know, when the time comes.
Wall Street Journal reporter Chris Weaver. Chris, thank you so much.
Sure. Anytime.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow in both the morning and the afternoon. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.